Hello, my friends, and welcome back to Farm Machinery Digest Radio. I'm your host, Ray Bohacks, that hot rod farmer from Cat Swamp Road. And as you know, we get together here every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Rural Radio, Sirius XM Channel 147, with a re-air normally at 6 p.m. on Sunday. But this week, it's going to be at 3 p.m. because of the rodeo. So hopefully, God willing, you listen to that rodeo, you enjoy it, and let that roll right into the hot rod farmer, all right, and go from there. So that is what is happening. And then next week, we'll be back to the normal time. And the topic of today's show has to do with spring being in the air. When spring is in the air, that means all of the small gasoline engines come out of hiding, right? They were hiding from the winter, unless you had a snowblower or a chainsaw that you were doing some cutting with because a tree fell down or some firewood, what have you. But if it's on a seed tender, if it's on a lawn tractor, if it's on anything else that you may use on the farm, maybe a transfer pump, right? It's going to be coming out of storage, and it's going to be getting ready. It's going to be like in the military, reporting for duty, right? And oftentimes, those engines can give you, small engines, big heartaches, right? They could ruin your day if they don't start or run properly. And usually, most of the time, is getting them to start easily, right? Because if they can't start, they can't do anything. So that is going to be the focus of today's show. But what I am going to really take a deep dive into is the common fuel-related problems with small engines. And if you look at the modern small engine, and I would say modern being the past 20 years or 25 years, which is not that modern, but since then the technology hasn't changed that much, is they have electronic ignition probably the past 40 years. That they have unadjustable carburetors, and they're actually very reliable engines because of that. But they still fall prey to the maladies that engines had, small engines had years ago. So that is what we're going to discuss. But most of the maladies today are related to fuel. And so I know somebody's, they're in the audience and they're nodding up and down and they're going, yeah, it's that ethanol and the fuel. Well, we're going to explain that. But really what comes up to is more carbon deposits in the engine, specifically on the intake valve and the top of the piston that mess things up. Though things get messed up in the carburetor, but even if the carburetor is 100% fine, those carbon deposits are a bane to those engines. And most people don't recognize that. So we're going to take a look at that. And I'm going to tell you what to do about them and hopefully how to avoid them. Gasoline is a hydrocarbon-based fuel, just like diesel fuel is. So what that means is that the byproduct of combustion is going to be carbon. But there's ways of you minimizing that and for it not to become a problem. So I'm going to ask you to sit pat during this short sponsor break and to never forget that agriculture runs on machinery, but profits on getting a small engine to go.
Out front tonight, the breaking news.
Stay informed and engaged with the stories that shape our world with the Sirius XM News channels.
Border Patrol and ICE have had to limit the...
From cable news to business.
And so the markets need to be prepared for that and the volatility and for that.
And international.
The strength of values. It's the strength of real freedom.
The Sirius XM News channels, starting at channel 112 and on the Sirius XM app.
I've traded on the floor and run a few international finance teams. I'm Scott Shelley, and I may know a thing or two.
Today's economic climate is just simply unsustainable. The consumer is more than stretched. We've ramped up interest rates. We've hiked them fast, right? But we still have sticky inflation.
I'm not going to tell you how to farm, no. But I am going to tell you how to invest the money you do make from farming. Don't miss the close with me on the Cowguy Close. Weekdays, 6 p.m. on Rural Radio, Sirius XM, channel 147.
Hi, I'm Bob Phillips.
And I'm Kelly Phillips. Texas is a big place, and we've seen it all.
Every week, we travel the back roads to find the most interesting places and passionate people in the Lone Star State.
And every week, we invite you to hop in and travel with us.
Join us for our weekly journey into the small towns and big hearts of the Texans we discover on Texas Country Reporter.
Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern, right here on Rural Radio, Channel 147, exclusively on Sirius XM.
Justin Mills here, rancher and host of the Working Ranch Radio Show, inviting you to join us on Saturday and Sunday at 12 noon Eastern on Rural Radio Channel 147. We'll go in depth on topics that are relevant to the beef industry. Plus, we'll hear from meteorologist Don Day on the long-term weather outlook, and the captain Tim O'Byrne with Working Ranch Magazine will stop in for Tim's 2 cents. So join us on Saturday and Sunday at 12 noon Eastern for the Working Ranch Radio Show on Rural Radio Channel 147, Sirius XM.
Welcome back to Farm Machinery Digest Radio. If you just tune in, I'm your host, Ray Bohax, the Hot Rod Farmer, and we're going to be discussing some maladies, fuel-related maladies with small engines, because, you know, as much as we may not want to admit it, in many instances, the small engine is paramount to the success of the farm, right? If you're planting soybeans and you have a seed tender, or you have some sort of pump that you need to operate, that small engine could bring your whole operation to a screeching halt. You could have a beautiful brand new $700,000 tractor that's running like a lark, you're humming along, running like a lark there, and that small engine's supposed to transfer those beans out of that seed tender into the planter, and rum, you're pulling a rope, right, and you're exhausted. And if it has electric start, you're cranking, and she doesn't want to go. That is could definitely ruin your day. But the first thing that I would like to address is the ethanol and the gasoline. Now, in many parts of the country, there is ethanol-enhanced gasoline. In New Jersey, where I farm, we have nothing but E10. You can't get anything more than E10 or anything less than E10. Excuse me. Excuse me. My allergies are really playing havoc with me today, right? That's because spring is in the air. So anyway, my allergies come out with the small engines. But we don't have anything but E10. And over the years, a lot of people have demonized E10. And, you know, you can only go by your experience in life. And if you've had problems with carburetors or on a chainsaw or a lawnmower or lots of guys with boat engines or something like that, then they say, well, you know, it's very easy to blame the E10 and say, well, the E10 ruined the gaskets or did this or crystallized or what have you. And I am not going to deny that that has the potential to happen. But I think what we're forgetting is that the gasoline from 40 years ago, 50 years ago, all right, was leaded gasoline. And when that gasoline sat in a carburetor, it turned to varnish. So did we trade one problem for another? Yes. All right. But the end result is that you still had gasoline turning to varnish in a carburetor. And in a current engine, we may not have it turn to varnish when it's ethanol-enhanced fuel. But we have some other problems crop up. But what I do want to establish in defense of ethanol, because I'm an ethanol guy. So some people I know have contacted me and said, well, I run my small engines off of canned fuel for $9, $10 a gallon, if not even more, maybe $30, $40 a gallon, right? Because I think it's a little bit more than a quarter. It's about $7 or $8. That is fine if you live in a subdivision. And you go out there and you spend $18 for the whole year and you put your ethanol-free fuel in there and away you go and happy motoring. But don't lull yourself into the security of thinking what we're going to discuss today with carbon deposits and what I just brought up about varnish forming cannot happen. All right, so obviously you cannot have the ethanol attack anything. And if it's a newer engine, then the gaskets and everything in the carburetor are meant to withstand ethanol, which likes to wick in moisture. So it's not really the ethanol that's attacking anything. It's the moisture that alcohol wicks in. But we'll just qualify it as ethanol. Now, the thing is that someone could come to me and say, well, I had problems with my carburetor and with the gaskets in the carburetor from the ethanol fuel, and they're blaming the ethanol fuel because that's the fuel that they're buying, right? So we gotta tag on something, we gotta blame something. And I'm not gonna deny that. But then they say, well, I've used canned, now I've switched to canned fuel and I haven't had a problem. As an engineer, that's inconclusive, because if it took 3 or 4 years for those gaskets to disintegrate and expand and become soft and whatever happened inside that carburetor with the ethanol-based fuel, and you fix it, and then you use canned fuel, well, you have to go 6 or 7 years out, all right, or 3 or 4 years, whatever. You have to have the same time frame. You can't go and say, well, I've used the canned fuel now for 6 months. I have no problems. Yeah, well, you fix the carburetor. You change the gaskets that expanded and deteriorated. And now you're using this fuel. Well, come back to me in 7 or 8 years. Well, it's at least the same time frame, and tell me you've had no issues. Because you're going to have issues because gasoline on the carbureted application is exposed to atmosphere. And that's what most people respectfully are forgetting. Is that since around 1987 was the last carburetor equipped engine on a production vehicle. I'm not talking about a lawnmower, I'm talking about a car or a pickup truck. So since then, the gasoline that you buy at a pump, ethanol, no ethanol, whatever it may be, is formulated for a fuel-injected engine. So you say, well, what difference does that make? Well, it makes a big difference because a fuel-injected engine does not expose the gasoline to atmosphere as a carburetor does. Every carburetor, whether it's on a chainsaw or whether it is on a lawn tractor or whether it's on an old grain truck or whether it's your drag race car, whatever it may be, that the ball vent is open to atmosphere. And the reason why the ball vent is open to atmosphere, because that is how a carburetor works. It works on the pressure differential of the atmosphere pressing onto the gasoline in the float bowl and the low pressure region, which we call a depression, which is created by the piston with the piston rings going up and down. So that's suction. All right. So people say that gasoline is pulled into the car, into the engine. It's actually pushed and pulled. So it's got the low pressure region by the piston sweeping towards bottom dead center, and we have atmospheric pressure, whatever it is at that particular day, at that time is pushing on the float bowl. So that is why gasoline on a carbureted application has to be exposed to atmospheric pressure, because high pressure goes to low pressure. So the atmospheric pressure is pushing the gasoline through the entire carburetor. And then the carburetor is first atomizing it, breaking into small particles, and then through the latent heat of vaporization, which is a law of physics of nature, that the gasoline is phase changing from a liquid which is atomized in small pieces, in small little particles. So if you take a can, an aerosol can, right, that's atomizing. It's spraying in small pieces. Your sprayer tip on your field sprayer is atomizing whatever you have in a tank. It's taking it and it's still in liquid form, but it's breaking it into small pieces. Like you taking soil, chunky soil, and breaking it up in your hands, right? So, and then the phase change occurs through heat, which is the latent heat of vaporization. So that is why modern gasoline becomes a prima donna for the most part with carbureted engines, not because of the ethanol, because it is formulated for fuel injected engines. So now, Has the industry, meaning the small engine industry, worked around this? Yes, and they have done an excellent job working around it. So if Steel is going to build a chainsaw, if Briggs & Stratton is going to build an engine, they're going to design the carburetor for current fuel. They're not going to design the carburetor for fuel back in 1962. They're going to design it for current fuel. And they realize that that fuel is going to be exposed to atmosphere. And when it's exposed to atmosphere, it's going to wick in moisture. And ethanol enhanced gasoline has the ability to wick in moisture more than non-ethanol, but that's not a bad guy there. All right. But the fact of the matter is that when gasoline is exposed to atmosphere, some of the distillates are going to go up into the air. All right, because you open up a can of gas, you hear the sound, the vapor pressure, a lot of things are going on with that. But to the credit of the small engine industry, that they have worked around 99% of those issues, but they cannot work around the issue of carbon deposits forming inside the engine, specifically on the intake valve and on the piston crown, as I said in the opening segment. Now, the thing is that when those carbon deposits form, they are going to impact how that engine runs and how that engine starts. And specifically, if it is a pull rope type of engine, if it's got some sort of electric start on it, then the cranking RPM is more consistent and at a higher speed, and masks a lot of the problems that you would have had if it was a pull rope system. So we're going to ask you to sit pat during this short sponsor break, and then we will come back and we were going to start to talk more about the deposits and the fuel and what is happening.
Wake up, get ready, grab breakfast, go to work, grab lunch, come home, run to practice, run to the store, grab dinner, go to bed, and repeat. Food fuels your day, and we fuel the people producing it with the latest news, information, and perspectives from across the globe. Ag Day is the place to learn about the business of food and farming. Join us and our team of experts as we cover the stories that keep the world moving. That's weekdays for Ag Day, the country experience.
I'm Billy Kinder with Kinder Outdoors, weekends at 9 a.m. Eastern, 8 Central, and 6 out West. Come spend a little time with me and my buddies.
Hey, this is your blood brother, Ted Nugent. And when I'm not in the great outdoors, which is very seldom, I'm thinking about it or dreaming about it with Kinder Outdoors.
We enjoy God's great gifts in the woods and on the water every week of the year. Make plans to join us in the Kinder Outdoors Camp House this weekend at 9 a.m. Eastern, 8 Central.
God bless America.
Right here on Rural Radio, Channel 147.
Amazon Ag Equipment is the top of the line for top growers and producers. Engineered in Germany, high precision, high performance, now in the U.S. and Canada. Big iron with fewer passes, less downtime. Amazon fertilizer spreaders precisely spread urea up to 120 feet. And Amazon tillage tools handle fall or spring all in one pass. Amazon, the name that others follow. Top growers, see Amazon.net.
Do you want to know more about where your food comes from? Maybe explore a new farm stay to visit or take a road trip to a unique food festival. If you do, start your journey across the American Midwest with me, Capri Cafaro, on Eat Your Heartland Out, Sundays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Sirius XM 147 Rural Radio.
Hey folks, this is Larry Stewart from the group Restless Heart. Thanks for listening to Rural Radio 147 on Sirius XM.
Alrighty, welcome back to the final and third segment of the show. Boy, this show goes too fast. All right. Now, since we've established that carbon deposits are forming, now a small engine that has short run cycles, that has the carburetor is not set properly, with even if it's a non-adjustable carburetor, and all of the above, is going to be more prone to build deposits. Now, even if everything is perfect on it, it's going to build deposits. So The deposits on the intake valve, which is called IVD, are going to wick in fuel because at first, when they're first formed, they're soft and they're gummy. And then over time, through heat cycles, it'll become hard like a diamond. Maybe not as hard as a diamond, but it'll become hard. And the same thing happens with the carbon deposits on the piston. But the intake valve deposits are going to be more determinative of how the engine starts and runs, but specifically how it starts. And if you have a small engine that has a rope start and you're pulling this rope and you're creating this pressure differential, right, between atmosphere and the carburetor by the movement of the piston, and the carburetor is doing exactly what it should do, exactly. There's nothing wrong with it whatsoever. It's a brand new carburetor, right? It's not dirty inside, what have you. There's those deposits on the valve are going to wick in the fuel and act like a sponge and limit the airflow and fuel flow to what we call charge, which is air and fuel mixed together into the engine, meaning the cylinder bore, and be hard to start. So now that's the theory behind it. All right, in a nutshell, there's a lot more to it. But how do you go about combating this? Well, the easiest way for you to go combating it is to use a fuel that has a detergent in it. And I'm saying all the time, detergent in it that will dissolve those deposits from the valve and the piston over time. You're not going to have one tank where a quart of fuel and a lawnmower and clean up 3 years worth of deposits. So what I do on my small engines is that I buy fuel at 5 gallons at a time, and I treat that fuel. So everything, all of the fuel that goes into my chainsaw, even though it's two-stroke, my pressure washer, my lawn tractor, my weed whacker, anything else that I have that is a small engine, constantly consumes treated fuel. And what kind of treatment are you going to put in it? You're going to use something that's called a complete fuel systems cleaner. I happen to use a Tecron, but if you like Seafoam, if you like something else, but it's a name, it has to be a name brand product, not Joe Schmo's cleaner. And lots of times these products are going to be labeled as fuel injection cleaners, but it's safe for a carburetor, but it has to be labeled saying complete fuel systems cleaner. Because if it is just a fuel injector cleaner, what will happen is that when it phase changes, it will flash off and not clean the deposits off the valve. Now also is that complete fuel systems cleaner is going to keep the passages inside the carburetor clean, because it's going to build gum and varnish in there. I'm using the term varnish just as a generic term, because that gasoline, it's not bad gasoline, it is exposed to atmosphere. So let's say if you use that lawn tractor once a week, you use that seed tender for only during planting soybeans, and you say, well, I'm not going to use it for another 4 or 5 days or another week, that carburetor, that gasoline in the carburetor and in the fuel tank there is going to be wicking in moisture. And it's going to be exposed to atmosphere, and a lot of the light ends of the gasoline are going to evaporate off, especially if it is in a very warm environment. That's a natural phenomenon. All right, but the thing is that the deposits, you want to be able to control your deposits. Now, other than my steel chainsaw, which was 6 or 7 years old, and finally the gaskets, the metering gaskets in the carburetor gave up the ghost, all right? Other than that, I have not had any problems with carburetors on my small engines because I treat every gallon of fuel that goes into it. So I happen to use Chevron Tecron. That's what I use, all right? And it's complete fuel systems cleaner, not fuel injection cleaner with Tecron, but there's other brands. There's Seafoam. There's, I think, Winds make something. Like I said, but I'm repeating it, it has to be a complete fuel systems cleaner. All right, and then the product I use, which is Tecron, and they're not a sponsor on the show or anything, so you know that. All right, the thing is that It's mixed at 1 ounce per gallon. And you're not mixing a bomb here, all right? So the thing is that so if you go a little bit more, a little bit less, so what I'll do is that I'll go and I'll mix in 5 ounces of product, and then I'll go to the gas station and I'll buy 5 gallons of gas. So that means my backup, my generators, my portable generators, everything is running off of treated fuel all of the time. And because of that, I have zero issues. I would like to tell you I have some issues, you know, to make it more dramatic, zero issues. I have not taken a carburetor apart, run my standby, my backup generators. My lawn tractor is 7 years old. The one before it was 12 years old. Never, I don't know what the inside of the carburetor looks like. And the motors run beautifully because not only am I keeping the carburetor clean inside, I am keeping the valves clean, the intake valve, and I'm keeping the top of the piston free of carbon. And as I'm repeating this, is that you are not going to do this with one treatment. So what you need to do is get into the habit of treating all of your small engine gasoline. And this also holds true for your pickup truck or your car or what have you. All right, the same dynamics happen even though you say, oh, my car's fuel injected. It makes no difference. You're going to still build carbon deposits. But today we're just discussing small engines. If you get into the habit of doing that, and if you say, well, I happened to run, you know, this summer, I didn't have the product. I ran 5 gallons of, you know, 5 gallons of gas through my lawn tractor or through my C10. That's not the end of the world. Just like if one day I didn't brush my teeth tonight because I didn't feel good and I went right to bed. I fell asleep. I was exhausted. I didn't brush my teeth. All right. You're not going to wake up the next day and your teeth are going to be rotted. But the flip side of that is that you are not going to remove 5 years, 3 years, 2 years of neglect of allowing those deposits to build up. Now, there is something that you may see when you go to buy gasoline that some pumps have a decal on it that say it's top tier gasoline. Now, top tier gasoline came out in around the late 1990s, maybe 2000, but since 1995, the EPA has required all gasoline, Joe's Gas in the middle of town, right, or any name brand, to have a minimum amount of detergent in it, all right, so the deposits don't form. But that is not enough detergent. It's a minimum amount of detergent, not enough to really keep everything clean. So even if you are using top-tier gasoline, and predominantly, most of the gasoline I run on my small engines is top tier, but you don't have to do that, all right? What you need to do is put the additive in, because the amount of additive, even in the top tier gasoline, is going to be minimal, all right? So you're going to additize it yourself. So if you buy, let's say, a bottle of Tecron or something else, it's about, today it's about $8 or $9 for 12 ounces, so you'd be able to treat about 12 gallons of gasoline. So maybe through the course of the year, you're going to use $20 worth of this product, or a little bit more if you're mowing a lot. But you will keep everything clean. It's going to take in the beginning, if you neglect it, it's going to take a while for it to get everything cleaned up. But from that point on, you're going to be golden. It's going to run like a top. It's going to start easily, and you're going to be a stranger to the inside of that carburetor and the inside of that engine. So I want to thank you so much for listening. And I want you to know that the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and my beloved, beloved America. If you have any questions, reach me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com, and be kind to all animals.
Hi, everybody. This is Matt Breckwald, farmer and former police officer, with a rural crime prevention tip just for you. Did you know that in the United Kingdom, there is so much theft of technological equipment from tractors that police now advise farmers to place tracking devices on it? And did you know that rural criminal behavior in the United Kingdom can be a leading indicator for what we can expect to see here in the U.S.? Take, for example, guidance systems on tractors. The initial purchase of a guidance system is expensive, but over time, this additional cost will definitely pay for itself. That is, unless it is stolen. Even if insurance will pay to replace a stolen GPS receiver, you are still responsible for the deductible. And if it is stolen during a window in the weather that allows you to be out there planting, fertilizing, or harvesting, you might be forced to go into the field without this crucial component. After a long day in the cab of your tractor, do you ever leave the tractor out in the field, away from your home, so you can start right where you left off tomorrow morning? Of course you do. A tractor sitting alone in the middle of a field with a GPS receiver sticking off of the top is like an invitation to a thief. Remember that many thieves are opportunists. They probably are not up for stealing your entire tractor, but your GPS receiver? You bet. When you install this equipment, consider an installation method that makes nightly removal easy for you. For example, the use of a metal plate with magnets can be a solution that makes it very easy for you to take this valuable equipment off of your tractor and back to the house with you at the end of the day or the end of the night. If the equipment is easy to remove, you will be more likely to protect your receivers, your monitors, and everything else by eliminating the opportunity for thieves to steal them in the first place. Hear full rural crime episodes of the Off-Farm Income Podcast with me, Matt Breckwald, every Saturday anywhere podcasts are found. And enjoy our 6 weekly episodes about the FFA and small business and ag every week.